The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, as it always is. And they've been serving the community since 1974. Like to talk to them? They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Well, here we are at the end of January 2018, and January is one of those months that happens to have five Tuesdays, which would mean an extra reading, but it also turns out that January is a rather short issue, and we don't have another week's worth of material. So I picked up the February issue, and it was a little heavy, and inside there is something that shows up about three times a year, and we sometimes get to, sometimes we don't. It's an insert labeled Our Home Something. In this particular case, it says Our Home, it says Our State Something, and this one says Our State Home on it. And on the cover is a picture of a yellow upholstered chair, and it says, Three Homes We Love, Family Farmhouse in Lumberton, Restored B&B in High Point, and Brevard Cozy Cabin, plus Historic Home and Garden Tours. So I thought it would make more sense to peel this out of the February issue and read it as an in-between the months reading, because this is something we don't necessarily get to delve into based on the size of the monthly issue. And here's the perfect opportunity to read from it. So, we are going to start with these series of three articles, Three Homes We Love, and if we have time, we'll talk about where to buy some accessories or some historic home and garden tours that are coming up. And I should mention that I am recovering from a respiratory illness, and it makes me cough sometimes. So you may hear me go away like that sometimes when I cough or turn my head and try to cough quietly, and I apologize for that. So, Our State Home, Homes We Love. From a carefully restored historic American foursquare in High Point, you can stay here, to a farmhouse with family touches in Lumberton, to a mountain couple's warm and rustic home and vacation cabin in Brevard. Yep, you can stay here too. These comfortable spots in North Carolina have us eager to kick off our shoes and settle in. And there's a picture here. This one is predominantly dark blue and medium blue furniture and wall covering. It says six nationally recognized designers put their signature touches on each of the rooms in Pandora's Manor Bed and Breakfast in High Point. Here, Barclay Butera's Isla Suite reflects his trademark blue color palette. So there's an upholstered chair, or I should say there's a chair with two upholstered cushions. It's a wooden chair, wooden frame chair, with kind of spindly sort of almost bamboo-like gray-painted feet and arm and backrests, and then two blue cushions with sort of a diagonal pattern of medium blue and white, and then a mostly blue pillow on it, and beside it there's a bench which is in a bright blue and white pattern with some white and blue patterned pillows on them, and then the wall is a dark blue with a geometric pattern. And over a leaf it says Farmhouse Charm. And on the left, we see a very bright red roof, or almost a pinkish red roof, I should say, and a very yellow front of a building, and a lot of white trim and railing, and the word Folly Farm by the front door. And it says, inside Susan Noble's charming yellow farmhouse, her workroom, which she often uses for drying flowers, features a double sink made of old spatterware buckets. And those are pictured here. You know, I never knew they were called that. I haven't seen one of these in many, many years. They are like a dark, almost like a porcelain, but it's a metal. And it's dark blue, and it's spattered with little dots of white. And if you look at it, you'd say, this is what the sky would look like if I were, like, way out in the ocean or something and there were no surrounding lights to distract, and I could really see a lot of spatterware buckets, in case you did not know. The article is Farmhouse Charm. On her family's land near Lumberton, one woman has turned her dream into reality, beam by beam. Written by Susan Stafford Kelly. Picnics and tents are all fine and well on the weekends when your brother and your nephews and you yourself are hunting and four-wheeling on your 235-acre family farm outside Lumberton for a while, but eventually Susan Noble thought it might be nice to have a bona fide bathroom and a bed. Heck, she says, I just decided I'm going to build a little house. That was 5 years ago. Like everything else, farmhouses evolve. Two rooms become three, four when Grandma moves in, and Noble has fostered that evolution, enlarging her little house, room by room, project by project. It's become Folly Farm, a name she's been saving ever since she glimpsed a sign on a college study abroad trip to England. Noble, a retired family and consumer sciences extension agent, has no formal training in interior design or decorating. She simply loves farms. So she took her farmhouse themes from what she knows and what she loves and what's going on around her. And Noble loves a chicken. Chickens in ceramic, metal, needlework, paintings, and fabrics are all over the house, on pillows and plates, atop the entrances, columns, and even on the tasseled handle of an antique corner cupboard. An old egg-gathering basket has become a chandelier, recalling her father's stint in the egg and produce business. A coop for the real thing was recently constructed and will welcome its first residents in the spring. Noble describes the house's decor as a whole lot of things that have been handed down, and a whole lot of things that have been picked up. 3 generations worth of furniture, including her great-grandfather's cedar chest, a rocking chair, and a settee, keep comfortable company with Imari porcelain, and more modern majolica, gingham-trimmed lampshades, and an antique sphere mirrored mantel in the kitchen. The bent nail in the mirror's original frame holds recipes perfectly at eye level. As for adapting to what's going on around her, Noble has yielded to the hunters and her family, including her brother Les, a frequent visitor. The upstairs loft bed is made up with camo shams and a necklace of duck calls instead of, say, pearls, dangles from the handle of a gun safe. A sliding barn door separates the bedroom from the bathroom, whose walls are covered in shiny silver corrugated tin roofing. What better waterproofing? Oversized hooks from pulleys have become towel holders. Repurposed farming tools are a favorite challenge for Noble and her mother, Jean, who also lives at Folly Farm. Agra Supply is one of our favorite places, Noble admits. Floors throughout are pine, a decision her contractor balked at because of the wood's softness and propensity for denting, but Noble didn't care. She insisted. The Drew farmhouse has pine floors. One of the most charming features in the house is the hall, which the Nobles call the dog trot because it has a door to the outside at either end, Local artist Thomas Ard painted a mural in green pastel and gold, representing a whimsical, childlike version of Folly Farm. There's the chicken coop, the pond where Les's dog swims, the fields. When the contractor complained that he wasn't in it, Ard added a toolbox outside the barn. A galley workroom with a view is filled with items that represent Noble's farmhouse mistress personality and talents, from canning implements to an antique flower press to drying racks for the potpourri she makes with her homegrown blossoms to the chains of hot peppers dangling and drying, slated to become Christmas wreaths. Spatterer buckets have been repurposed as a double sink. Noble hasn't missed a farmhouse trick. Outside, herbs thrive in an old watering trough. A trowel, hung vertically, offers a handy pull to get yourself up to the steps of the porch. Tree stumps, not wicker, provide seating around an outdoor fire pit. Farmers, after all, invented the concept of reduce, reuse, recycle. We're nowhere near finished, Noble says. The twin themes of farming and hunting are down home enough to keep her little house expanding, need by need, beam by beam, chicken by chicken. And now, Designer's Paradise, celebrity designers, thoughtful restoration, and Southern hospitality helped turn a historic High Point home into a thoroughly modern boutique. Bread and breakfast. Full page picture here on the left. It's a white buck with a very nice pair of antlers, and it says on the right, on the right hand side, it's a living room scene. It's a sort of a steel blue sofa, modern in styling, low back, a half dozen cushions of various offset colors on it, and then behind it is a very large picture of a peacock with its tail feathers expended. I don't know whether it's intended to be a black and white. I guess it's a sort of a sepia tone picture, really. There's not a lot of color in it, and normally peacock feathers are very colorful. The caption says, the Tom Felicia designed Fraser Suite at Pandora's Manor features a living room filled with relaxing blues and grays, gold accents, and lots of texture. Overleaf is a picture of a very wide porch with white ceiling fans. In downtown High Point, evidence of forward-thinking designers is everywhere. In showrooms and in the contemporary designs of the buildings themselves, from the sleek glass ship that houses Natuzzi furniture to the wavy lines of Showplace near the hub of the High Point Market. But over on West High Avenue is something a bit more classic, the historic white-columned house known as Pandora's Manor. Pandora, in this case, has nothing to do with the over-curious gal of Greek mythology. Instead, the manor, built in 1905, is named for the wife of Henry Fraser, the co-founder of the Alma and Myrtle Desk Companies, which, in the 1950s, became the largest office furniture manufacturers in the country. Fraser eventually sold the residence to the Wilson family of High Point. Later, the manse became a boarding house. Finally, 2 years ago, Ridvan Tartargill of Eastern Accents, a high-end textile company, bought the home and set about transforming it into a boutique hotel. Creative director Louise Trafficante oversaw the downstairs with the goal of maintaining the history of the home and the feel of its era. The music room where ladies would have gathered after dinner is all silvers and golds, even the cork wall covering lending a warmly feminine feeling. Across the hall, the lounge, with its masculine furniture and chessboard inlay, evokes port and cigars. In the dining room, an oversized 1960s map of North Carolina's road system is a reminder of just how long it took to get to the beach decades ago. beneath 16-foot ceilings. Gleaming original hardwood floors are set concentrically, square after square, becoming smaller and smaller, like a set of Russian nesting dolls. As with the sliding pocket doors, mantels throughout the house are original, each bearing an antique clock. An immense circular velvet settee dominates the foyer. All of these public rooms, where rehearsal dinners, showers, and other parties and events take place, boast custom fabrics, pillows, and curtains. The effect is comfortable and welcoming. Beyond the upholstered wicker furniture on the wide front porch stands a half cocoon of rattan filled with cushions. Our egg, as the events coordinator Connie Lineberry puts it, simply begging to be curled up in with a glass of wine and a good book. The kitchen, though, is as sleek as any upscale modern restaurant. The bar, created by North Carolina craftsmen, seats 12. The better to watch the chef prepare your catered dinner. Or the innkeeper, Lisa Cruz, prepare your breakfast. Pandora's Manor is an event space, but it's much more dedicated to luxury lodgings. The six bedrooms illustrate what happens when celebrity designers are presented with a blank slate, an unlimited budget, and a command to have at it. The results are one of a kind. Pull out the stops, sleeping and living and lounging spaces, canvases for six lucky designers' wildest dreams. The downstairs bedroom is the project of Jason Oliver Nixon and John Loke, High Point's own whimsical madcap gents. Some 350 yards of fabric, a record in Pandora's renovation, cover the walls. The sprightly green and blue print matches the colors of the braided rug from Capel beneath your feet. The unifying element in every room is a black and white bathroom, complete with North Carolina toiletries made just for Pandora's. Every guest receives their own for keeps slippers and black and white pajamas, stripes for gents, polka dots for ladies. Some bathrooms boast steam showers. All have heated racks to keep your towels toasty. Arkansan designer Toby Fairley's room is sunshine itself, bold egg yolk yellow with a Greek key motif in clean ebony right down to the rug loomed by North Carolina's New River artisans. Have pals over for a gab fest or drinks before dinner. Benches, chairs, and poofs make up a full-on gathering place. Feeling feminine rather than bold? In Celery Kemble's bedroom, the designer Palm Beach Heritage glows serenely in greens and pinks, as pale and delicate as well. The inside of a conch shell, in lieu of an actual shoreline, sink your toes into a plush, furry circle of sand-hued carpet. Don't be intimidated if these stellar designer names aren't part of your everyday conversation. Had to go through a double spread in the center here. A coffee table book filled with glossy photographs of their work is placed in some of the rooms. And suites, because two of the six bedrooms have separate sitting rooms. Barclay Butera has knitted out his with a bar and gourmand candy and board games closet. The suite's textured grass cloth wallpaper features a pattern so complicated it took High Point's best wallpaper hanger 4 days to complete, and on plaster walls, no less. Throughout the rooms, lamps, artwork, and even the fireplace surrounds, including one outlined in mirrored subway tiles, were personally specced by the individual designer, like Thomas Felicia's ceiling wallpaper, squiggly and luminescent as an abalone shell, and the door panels padded in leather. In 1905, storage space was scant, so Felicia has showcased the closet in his bedroom with a designer chandelier. For an aura of evening, glide into Alexa Hampton's bedroom. The daughter of famous designer Mark Hampton opted for restful, darker tones of charcoal and slate blue. No matter the surroundings, though, the centerpieces of these bedrooms are the beds themselves. Raw silk duvets, furry headboards as deep and silky as mink, pillows by the dozens, and matelassé bedspreads to die for. Naturally, furniture market folks flock to the manor, but so do High Point University parents, just marrieds, and folks who want to be plain old pampered. What else but the epicenter of the furnishing world can you, or rather, where else but the epicenter of the furnishing world can you find a historic home open to the public that has been given over to the best that industry can summon in both designers and designs? The idea, Linebury says, is that you can come into this, and when you come back, it's your home. Pandora's Manor, sumptuous but not snooty, high-end but not highbrow, pristine but not prissy. Ever been herded through a show house or showroom with vignettes so flawlessly rendered that you want to fling yourself onto the scene and onto the bed and forget the tour, your troubles, the world outside, or just experience perfection? I know just the place. Pandora's Manor is at 407 West High Avenue in High Point. And you are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Now, the last article here. Well, I guess it's not the last article. This is a little interim. Let me see, because we don't have a lot of time here. I think I will read the last article first and then come back to this one. A storied stay. When Thomas Wolfe finally came home again, he found his way to Partridge Hill in Brevard, where his literary friend Hamilton Basso lived and wrote 9 novels. Now you can pay a visit too. Written by Louise Jarvis Flynn. The house on the wooded hill was an ideal respite when, in 1935, a young novelist and literary critic named Hamilton Basso moved in. The hassle and noise, not to mention the expense of life in New York City, had nudged the New Orleans native and his wife back down south and eventually to Brevard. Writing came easier in the rambling house called Partridge Hill, overlooking the French Broad River Valley, where only a distant train whistle could break the spell of isolation. That is, until Thomas Wolfe came to town. Basso and Wolfe became fast friends through their mutual editor, Maxwell Perkins. When Wolfe finally returned to the Asheville area to reckon with the place and family he could never quite escape, it was Basso who welcomed him home. In a letter left at the post office, Basso wrote on the outside, "Postmaster, will you be good enough to hold this until the arrival of the addressee, whose presence will be made known, probably by an earthquake or some other violent upheaval?" Charles and Jean Brendel, the owners of Partridge Hill since 1994, have learned enough about both writers to understand what sort of an upheaval a Wolfe visit could cause. He would stay for days to talk about their work, books, other writers, Jean says. One time, Wolfe and his family came to visit, and poor Basso's wife didn't have anything in the house to serve them but half of a chocolate cake. The Brendels have their own tiny earthquakes to keep their 9-acre property lively, 15 grandchildren. And the house, which has been owned by 4 families since the Bassos, is every bit the warm, gracious farmhouse once imagines it was. Still, Charles says, we needed the space for overflow. His son, a civil engineer, sketched a design for a classic cavern perched on the bluff above Partridge Hill. The whimsical 2-bedroom house, called Partridge Nest, is a getaway not just for family, but for anyone hoping to find the same woodland quiet that Wolfe and Basso once filled with their brash ideas and aching stories. Artists of all sorts have been drawn to Partridge Hill. A potter who lived there in the 1970s threw her failed vessels into the gully. A weaver and an architect owned the house before Charles and Jean. Angora goats roamed the pasture, and a loom stood in what is now the Brendels' bedroom. Jean, who has a background in interior design, found a perfect muse here, a place to leave her mark to. She and Charles first toured the house on a Wednesday at lunchtime. By Friday, they'd put in an offer. Literary pedigree was only part of the appeal. The place has oodles of charm, like the hand-carved spindles on the wraparound porch. Adjacent to the property is an ancient cemetery and a church. During construction of the Partridge Nest in 2003, the little chapel allowed workers to park there and walk through the woods to the building site. Later, Jean says, we found out that the workmen had pooled together to make a contribution to the church as a thank you. The cabin is hemmed in by laurel and rhododendron, one of Charles' many interior projects. He painted walls and installed floorboards and tile, was building a dramatic stair railing out of rhododendron branches, finding 170 branches there were the right thickness and relatively straight, and aligning them to code 4 inches apart was maddening. I have nightmares about them every night, he jokes. The Nest may be a new chapter in Partridge Hill's story, but the farmhouse will always draw Wolf fans and literary romantics. Years ago, Charles struck up a friendship with a fellow Citadel alumnus, novelist Pat Conroy, who'd come up to Cashiers to write for much of the same reason that Basso holed up in Brevard. I told Pat about our house and wanted him to come over and sit on the porch where Basso and Wolf used to talk, Charles says. Conroy, who was a great admirer of both writers, sent Charles 3 first-edition Basso novels, including his most acclaimed one, The View from Pompey's Head. The note, though short, spoke volumes. Here are the Basso's books. I'm sending them home to the place they were born. The Partridge Nest is at 640 Everett Farm Road in Pisgah Forest. And now back to that little interim article, because it's pretty short. Market value, the largest home furnishings trade show in the world, has been making High Point a destination for more than a century. For a week or two in April and October, Triad area residents don't go out for dinner. The market is going on, the High Point Market. That is the largest home furnishings trade show in the world, and restaurants are packed with some 75,000 attendees. How the market got to this point is impressive. By 1900, thanks to the Southern Railroad, cheap labor, and plenty of hardwood timber in the Piedmont and Mountains, High Point was the leading furniture manufacturing center in the South. The next year, 35 area manufacturers met to discuss creating a furniture exposition to compete with markets in New York City and Chicago. In that first decade of the new century, more than 250 furniture companies formed in North Carolina, double that of any other southern state. And a quest to build a large showroom facility began. In 1913, 100 manufacturers displayed wares to 1,000 dealers at the first Southern Exposition. By 1922, insiders began referring to the event as the High Point Market, and by 1924, the Exposition Building had sold its last square foot of space. By 1955, almost half of all wooden bedroom furniture made in the U.S. was produced within a 125-mile radius of High Point. Well, that, my friends, is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be ready to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, triangleradingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.